Hi, my name is Nina, and I'm an addict and an alcoholic. It is all about me. Thank you. So, I mean, actually, you know, I was sitting here thinking, because how appropriate being Halloween scary, and how scared I am to be up here, because I'm sitting here. I know. But, and like, sitting here pawning it off on my fiance, because it was supposed to be both of us. Well, no, you do it. We'll say you flipped a coin, and you lost the toss. And it was like, okay, as it's getting closer, it's like something was urging me and telling me, that's not the program we live today. So here I am. And the fear that I feel is normal, and it's real, and it's okay. And a very wise person told me that fear is not a brick wall. You can't walk through it, and because of this program and my relationship with God today, and all the loving people and support that I have in this room, I don't have to walk through this fear alone. And it's really, this is not about me and if I'm gonna say it eloquently enough, do I have the right words? Am I gonna make an impact? What are they gonna think about me? Yada, yada, yada. You know, that's me being selfish, self-centered, and self-absorbed. And that's not how I wanna live today. This is really about God saying what he needs for me to say. So I'm gonna say exactly what he needs for me to say. And if I can have an impact on one person, then it's been, all this feeling inside has been well worth it. So I guess I will share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I don't have this traumatic childhood of abuse or neglect, or I come from a very, actually, pretty normal childhood. A lot of playing in the dirt, climbing trees, lots of friends. Very loving family, always took care of me. I never went without. But I still always never felt right. And it just goes to show you that you don't have to come from trauma, that this disease does not care who you are, what happened to you, what color you are, if you're rich, you're poor, it just doesn't matter. And from a very young age, I never felt right, even though I was loved and taken care of. I always did things just to fit in. I had my first drink when I was about 11 years old, and I remember getting so sick and puking all over the place. I remember puking up blood and just being just sick and ill, but couldn't wait to do it again. And I felt so cool because all the kids, you know, I was in with the in crowd, you know, and so I just stayed with that crowd and kept going with them. I mean, it wasn't like full-blown alcoholism at 11, 10 years old, but just doing things, stealing, getting into trouble. You know, I had a girlfriend whose parents smoked pot. She used to steal their weed. You know, we would smoke it. Smoke cigarettes, take our cigarettes and go smoke them. Just, you know, stuff like that. I get to high school. I tried to do the straight and narrow. I was going to class. I got on the swim team. I was doing real well, and then that didn't last, because I suffer from this disease. You know, I have this, and I did not like myself, and I wanted to be anywhere else but where I was. So I went with the people that were getting high and drinking. So when you're getting high and drinking and skipping out of school, and then you try to go to class, you can't really focus on what's going on. So I dropped out of high school. So I had a freshman, not even a freshman, education. When I came in, well, I shouldn't say that, when I came into these rooms, I did manage to scrape up a GED when I was about 31, but we'll get to that because that was another attempt at trying to get sober. So, you know, I just, you know, I mean, you all know what it's like, really. I mean, it might be different, but it's really the same. You know, used, partied, did dumb things through my teen years. I managed to keep jobs, though, and work. I got my first job when I was like 14, washing dishes, and then waitressing and bartending. Waitressing through my teens, and then when I was in my 20s, bartending. Also, that's a real good job for when you use. You always have cash on hand and always partying, you know, with the people at work and after work, and you didn't have to be to work till late. And so I'm sure that's why I was able to get to work. I didn't have to get up in the morning. But so, I mean, through my 20s, it was, you know, I was a functioning addict, I guess, but I still was miserable. And then I met my husband, and I ended up getting pregnant with my daughter, and I thought things were going to change then, because I managed to stop using when I was pregnant with her. So I thought it was gonna be different. I wasn't gonna to use, but within a week of having her, I was again using and not such a good mother for many years, or a wife. Managed to just kind of, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and go through like the whole. I'm gonna get more to kind of what happened, I guess. My husband and I were going to divorce, and I moved to Pennsylvania with my daughter, and I managed to stay sober there too. But I know eventually if I had stayed there, I would start using there too. I started having a friend mail me pot and cocaine. So, and then I started meeting people there and was going to go and, you know, hang out, probably eventually hang out with them. So that were people, places, and things. You know, like if you remove yourself and you move away and you move away from all the money, you take yourself with you. And that's pretty much what happened. And when I came home, my husband and I reconciled. And when I came home is when it really, just really all started to go downhill. And pretty fast. And I didn't want to do the things that I was doing, but I didn't know any other way to live. That's all I did all my life. Use. I didn't have an education. I didn't cultivate any kind of habit, hobbies or anything, because smoking pot, doing coke, and drugs, those were my hobbies. Going to parties, quarter bill parties, those were my hobbies. I was good at playing quarters and drinking games. I had that shit down. It got bad, and I stayed in a very dysfunctional marriage because he funded my habit. He brought home a very nice paycheck and was able to fund my habit. So I didn't have to prostitute myself per se on the streets, but I prostituted myself by staying somewhere that was very sick. So. And I know today that if I was to go out there today, I would be doing all those things that I never, never did. And I know that. I know that in my heart of hearts. But anyways, so back to what happened. It was another drunken night of, well, my poor daughter through all this, through these years of not, especially in the last half of my addiction, she was afraid to go to bed at night. She was fearful. Just the slightest thing made her fidget, and she's very neurotic and just scared all the time because mom is very unpredictable and doesn't know what's coming. So the last night of my, I hadn't never laid a hand on her yet. I had threatened to and said some pretty awful things and drunken stupors and the next day when I'm hungover and feel like crap and feel crap about myself, you know, the whole cycle. So then you use again, so because you feel bad. You know, I knew no other way to live. This is all I knew. I really got to the point in my life where this is how I was going to die. This was it. This is it. You know, this is going to be the memory of me for my daughter. This is my legacy. Anyways, so it took me a long time to admit it out loud. What I had done that finally brought me to this place. You know, my bottom. It was a drunken night. To this day, I still do not remember any of it. But I woke up in the morning, all battered, and looking around my home, trashed, wondering what the hell had happened. Or heck, I'm sorry. What the heck had happened? And come to find out that I had put my hands around my daughter's neck, and I had choked her to the point of passing out. And I trashed my house and caused some real damage, real bad. And so that was what happened. You know, a buildup. You know, I could go on for hours and all those things, but really I don't want to live in that anymore. I wanted to share a little bit of that, just so when I realized what I had done, again, I'm in her room crying, saying how sorry I was. I'm so sorry, I didn't know what I was doing. And she was done, and my husband was done with me, and said to me, you need to get out of here. You need to get out, you need to go. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll do something, I'll stop, I'll get help. But I had no clue, really. You know, you hear of AA and stuff on TV, you know, movies, you've seen it and stuff, and but I didn't really know of meetings or anything like that. Didn't know this way of life today that I've been so blessed with. That brings a smile to my face and tears to my eyes, but they're tears of joy when I talk about that. But so I remember picking up the phone and calling the AA hotline and calling and saying, okay, I'm gonna go to this meeting. And my husband's like, whatever, you know, whatever. And so I go, I'm on my way to this meeting, and I call my drug dealer on the way to the meeting, because I'm going to get some Percocets, because Percocets don't make me crazy. Vodka makes me crazy. Vodka makes me black out. Vodka is the one that makes me violent. Not Percocets. Percocets make me feel warm and fuzzy and happy and, you know, and loving and kind. Well, so anyways, so I'm on my way to this meeting. I got it all set up. This meeting is at 6 at the How To Club. And so I'm like, yeah, I should be done. I'll be over there about 8:30. It's all set up, okay? So I go on this meeting. Now, mind you, right, I said I didn't want to live the way I was living, but I knew no other way, you know? But when I was driving there, too, I was thinking to myself, okay, I'll go check this out. Maybe I'll get clean for a little bit. I'll be all good. Everything will be fine. Then I can, you know, I can go back to using without any really consequences or anything. And, well, anyways, I go into this meeting, and I sit down, and I'm just like, whatever. And then I start hearing these people talking, and I was like, oh, holy shit, I'm home. Wow. I just was blown away by the things that were said, and it was just like, there is another way to live. I do not have to live this way anymore. There is something out there. There's something here. I don't know what it is exactly. I'm not sure, but there's something going on, and it's better than what I got going on. And I never called that drug dealer again, and that was April 8th of 2010. So And that night, I listened to these people talk, and I heard about sponsorship and all this. So that night, I got a sponsor that night, and she bought me a big book. And she started working with me. That meeting was on a Saturday night, and she started working with me that Sunday morning, or that Sunday, like, afternoon. And then took me to my first Cocaine Anonymous meeting, which was Sunday Night Strength. And then when I walked into that meeting, then I was like, I'm really home. And I was like, wow. I was just blown away. And I just started taking it in and coming to the meetings and doing the things that were suggested and working with my sponsor and doing the things that she suggested. You know, I was scared and terrified and insecure, and I'm still scared, terrified, and insecure. But today, I can say it out loud. I can admit it. I see that where the selfishness and the self-seeking and all the fear and all, I see all that today. So I can work through it, and I can talk to my sponsor today. Today, I have a different sponsor than I initially had, and I've had two prior, or two after the first one I had that both relapsed. But the one I have today is a spiritually sound woman, the beautiful lady who introduced me tonight and said those kind words to me, who helps me grow and be a better person. And you know, I love her to death. I do. She's the shit. So anyways, sorry, Diane. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to break your anonymity. Well, yeah, I did. Anyways, so yeah, I started working with a sponsor, and I was participating and going to the meetings and going, helping at the functions, doing service work to the best of my ability at the time, you know, and working those steps to the best of my ability at the time. When I look back now, I didn't, you know, but at the time, I did it to the best of my ability, and I believe that's what kept me coming back, because there was a time when I walked a very thin line. When I was about 2 years sober, I kind of stopped coming to me. In my first 2 years of sobriety, I had some major life changes, a divorce, because once I got sober, did you ever hear that said that was I drunk the whole entire relationship? And I was, oh yeah, I was. Because once I was sober and saw how dysfunctional it really was, we just needs to end, you know. And I took $300, a few of my items, and I had moved out into my sponsee sister's home, and she rented me a room for like a year and a half, 2 years, and where I went back to school. Now I have a career. But I stopped coming to meetings because I worked a second shift job. I did get a job waitressing and bartending, but it wasn't this is how God works. You know, I wanted to say something too, because I just remembered this from where that obsession. I was about three or four weeks sober, and I was going to that Thursday night meeting over on 51st and Center. I can't remember the name of it, but they had from 6 to 7 was the newcomer meeting. And then from 7 to, I think it was 8 or 8:30 was a topic. I think it was something like that. You know what I'm talking about, right, Lewis? And I went to that newcomer meeting. When I went, I had every intention of hooking up and going and using. But I went to this meeting anyways. I didn't hear anything profound at that meeting that stopped me from going and using, because I had it in my mind. And that just goes to show how strong that obsession is. And that only that obsession can be really lifted by God. And not, he works through people, but for me that night, I remember going with every intention, because I was in the neighborhood. And I got in the car, and the next thing I remember, I was walking through my front door, hanging my keys up on the thing. And it was like, I wasn't the person who drove home. Like somebody, it was me physically, but like I literally don't remember driving home, and I just remember next walking through my door. And then for me, that's when all of a sudden it was like I really felt that there was something bigger. You know, I always knew there was, but it wasn't for me. kind of thing. And anyways, now I lost track where I was. Where was I? So, yeah. Where I was, it got to that place when I stopped, when I disconnected myself and stopped coming around and stopped going to the meetings and stopped participating in functions because I was working second shift and I was going to school and I was always too busy or always too tired or always this or always that. And I remember being invited to one of the kids that I worked with, his birthday party. He's like 24, you know, and everybody was going and I wanted to go. And I was like planning on drinking and like was like, you know what, everybody else has had a relapse, why can't I have a relapse? I don't know if I'm really an alcoholic. I don't know, you know, how do I know? I haven't drank anything, you know, I haven't relapsed. I don't know, maybe I can, maybe I am healed. Just that fine line that I was walking there, talking myself into it, and that's because I was disconnecting from God, from the meetings, from my life source. So, but because of what I did learn already, I knew in the back of in my heart of hearts that something wasn't right. So I did. I got back coming to the meetings and reconnecting and getting working with another sponsor and coming and doing this deal. I need to be here and be present in order for me to stay sober. I used to be ashamed to admit that I was an addict, but I'm actually proud and very privileged today because of me being an addict today, I get to live this incredible life. Because when I look back on what it was like 5 years ago to what it is today, it's like, wow, I am blown away at, you know, the daughter that hated me, that wouldn't talk to me, I now have a killer relationship with. And it's because of God, and it's because of this program, and me working these steps, and living this new way of life. It's like, it's not even like steps anymore, it's like a concept, it's a way of living, it's a way of doing things, it's integrity, it's honesty, it's, you know, helping others, it's getting out of yourself. Especially when you are feeling selfish, it's seeing those character defects, and you know, doing your best to make an effort to change them. You know, I mean, we're not perfect by any means. You know, God takes us broken people and you know, makes us whole. You know, uses our character defects, and really like getting scatterbrained. I'm really sorry if I'm babbling, because like in my short time of sobriety, I've only spoken twice, and once was at a little smaller meeting a couple months ago, and then tonight with all these faces here. So I'm sorry if I'm babbling and kind of jumping all over the place. Thank you. It's amazing. What it is today. I have a career today. I have my own things that aren't, you know, dependent. I'm not dependent on this man. I'm in a healthy relationship. I'm engaged to be married. I'm with my soulmate. I have a great relationship with my kid. It's amazing. And, you know, she had to go, I got her in therapy, and she had to, you know, and she had to work through her things. And when I was about a year sober is when she finally, because I was about 2 weeks sober, and I remember going, well, sober, why are you so mad? You know, seriously, I was serious, like, how dare she still hate me and not talk to me? But you know, I look back now, and you know, and my sponsor at the time told me, be prepared that child might not ever forgive you. And that was something that really stung, but it was like, wow, okay. And when I was a little over a year, and she's all of a sudden, I was dropping her off. She looked at me and with tears in her eyes and says, "I understand. It was a disease. You have a disease. It's not a matter." She understands that it wasn't a matter of that I didn't love her enough. And what it took was that daily amends with her and working this program and her seeing me working it and her seeing me go through these ups and downs, these peaks and valleys in these last 5 years that I go through. But today I'm working on it and I'm striving to be a better person today. There's no finish line. And you know, I really wouldn't want a finish line, to be honest with you, because if I got to a finish line, then that means I'm done, and then there's no more room to grow or change and to be better. And I want to be better today than I was yesterday. And the only way I can do that is by staying connected and staying connected with my, you know, with God. And, you know, that's my higher power, the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's who keeps me grounded and who I'm striving to build a better relationship with today, because I know that, you know, like it says in the big book, I have a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance. So without that, none of this is possible. So for me, that's important to keep that, and then the rest is all comes because of it. And is every day puppy dogs, birthday cakes, balloons? No, by no means. And do I have days where I'm still self-pity, whiny? It's always about me, right? I mean, those who know me know that. It's always about me. You're thinking about me? You're talking about me? So, I mean, you guys probably are all thinking about me right now. And that's what I love about this program, because it is about me. I'm just kidding. I know it's not about me, and that's why I decided to get up here and actually do this today and walk through the fear and not pawn it off on Lee. Because it's me worrying about how I'm going to sound to you, not about what God's going to say through me to help even one person. So, and life, to the newcomer, to people that might be struggling, you know, just keep suiting up, showing up, and keep doing the deal, and it's, you know, make that connection with the higher power first and foremost, you know, whoever you call your higher power. You know, I don't try to push my higher power on anybody. It's what works for you. And I strongly and firmly believe, you know, what necessarily works. I mean, the whole general idea of it, yes. But, you know, there's like little tweaks of things that might not work for another person that works for another. You know, find what works for you and do it and get a sponsor and work these steps and be of service, because it's the best way to really get out of yourself. Even when I don't want to do, like, be part of this entertainment fundraising committee that I got railroaded into, the CA railroad that I complain and bitch about all the time. I'm just kidding. But it's been awesome because it's brought me closer to two incredible people that I wasn't, you know, I was friends with, but not, you know, and to be working with them and learning a lot from them about, you know, doing this deal, you know, not just talking it, but actually working it and walking it, you know, working it and talking it and walking it and actually doing it and living it. And for me, that's, you know, what I strive for today. I just strive to try to be better than I was yesterday. I try my hardest to not think about tomorrow and really stay focused on today. And just, I strongly suggest to the newcomer, this is a beautiful thing if you just let it work and do, especially when you don't want to do it. That's when you got to do it. That's when you got to do it. So I don't think I have anything else to say. I don't feel as scared as I did. I feel actually very at peace and not really caring what anybody thinks. Just a little. just a little. But see, I can see that. I can laugh at myself about it. Whereas even just a few months ago, I'd be freaking out. And I still freak out, but I know that I'm loved and I'm cared about. And I look in the mirror today and I love the person that I see. Not always, but I'm working on it. I love that person I see more than I did just even a year ago. So it's just keep striving forward, doing the best that I can, and try to be an example and for my daughter and just live a better life today. So I just want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to me tonight, and I do love you all and care for you very deeply, Jeff. And with that, I'll pass.